Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Go with the way the market's changed?
No, because I don't think Baumgartner believes that. I think he is not worried about that. I mean, he doesn't think he's going to go out and get $60 million or something. He still thinks he's a top-of-the-line guy. And you never know. For these guys, the market has changed, but you look at last year, and Patrick Corbin right away, I think, got 130, 140, I mean, right at the start of free agency. So you still always have one or two starting pitchers, even the last couple of years. I mean, Yu Darvish got paid. So there are still those guys who get that big deal. And Garrett Cole is going to be out there, and he's going to get the biggest deal. But if Baumgartner has a good second half and has a good postseason, I mean, he's going to be able to ask for a lot. So I don't think they can look up here in July and say, hey, maybe we can bring him back a little bit cheaper, and you still also have to remember that they do have big payroll issues going forward, and that's something that hasn't gone away, and they were hoping to get rid of some of that, and a lot of those guys are playing better right now, so that helps, but still, moving forward, I think adding another $20 million a year player to the payroll is something they don't want to do.
When you look at the success this team is having, how fitting would it be for Bolts, the skipper, to get some votes for manager of the year? Do you think that's possible now because of the way they're playing?
Maybe if they make the playoffs, I think he would probably get some votes, but you still have to keep in mind they're 16.5 out in their division. They're still 4 under .500.
So sure.
I saw Bob Nightingale tweet that last night, and I know Bob, I like Bob, but I think, they're not even a .500 team right now. So that to me is getting a little ahead of things.
Alex, before we let you go, Jeff Samardzija yesterday, as we talked about earlier, he was fantastic given the situation at altitude. It was a humid day in Colorado. But you know what? This is becoming sort of a thing. His last three outings, he's 3-0. He's going deep into games. He's got a 1.66 ERA during that stretch. And the velocity on his fastballs on the rise. I believe he was talking yesterday about how early in the season he was frustrated that the Giants weren't letting him work deeper in the games, but they were kind of protecting that shoulder, and now the strength is starting to come back, and he's seeing the reason why. Which Samardzija should we expect moving forward? Is this a sign of things to come?
Yeah, I think maybe more of the guy we saw a couple of years ago. I mean, he hasn't really been a whatever he's at right now, 1.6 or 2 or whatever his ERA is the last stretch. I mean, that hasn't really been him, but the guy we saw yesterday is reminiscent of 2 years ago when he was healthy. The stuff is back to being pretty good, and they're allowing him to go a little bit deeper. I still think they're going to watch him closely. I still think, we won't see him go 7-8 innings most times out. They just want to be careful with him. But certainly they had a good plan early on this season, and when they've needed him the last couple of weeks and when his pitch count's been low, and yesterday was the day when they needed him, I mean, they were going to let him go deep. He's been able to do that. So the plan they had early on was a good one, and that was one that you go back to spring training, and they told us pretty much right away, this guy's going to go 5 innings to start, and you look at early in the season, that was basically who he was, no matter what his results were. And I know that was hard on him, but you look up here, and it's feeling pretty good, and that's a nice little boost, because this is a guy that last year, it looked like it just looked like he was going to be hard to figure out. The results weren't there, and a shoulder injury is something that, has wrecked a lot of careers. But you could kind of see yesterday, and talking to him after the game, he's just so excited about the way he feels physically. So I think for him, that's a positive sign. And no matter what they do in the second half or what they do before the trade deadline, he's going to be here. He's going to be a guy they lean on, whether they're going for this or whether they're taking a step back. If they do that, he's going to kind of be leading a young staff. So it's positive for him and for the team that he's able to look the way he did yesterday.
Giants insider, NBC Sports Bay Area, Alex Pavlovich with Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Great stuff as always, Alex. Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Take it easy, guys.
Samardzija was incredible yesterday. Incredible. I make my jokes, but at the same time, I've got to be able to sit there and own it. when the time comes to own it.
You rode with him.
And he, well, yeah, yesterday was the first time I ever played him in Bet 162, and he ended up coming through. I'm tracking the game. I didn't have the chance to watch it because I had some other things going on before I got back.
Sure.
And I'm looking at it on the app, and they're up 5-0 in the top of the first. And I'm thinking, good God, this is going to just be one of those days at Coors. So you're figuring this is a great lead to spot Samardzija. He's plus 180. This could be one of the all-time great cashings with an underdog. Just find a way to maintain. And he gets through the first. And it's like, all right, nice start, but there's still a long way to go. And then he gets through the second and the third, and the Giants start piling it on. You're starting to realize that the Giants are taking advantage of the conditions, but the Rockies aren't able to. That's one of the all-time great pitching performances we've seen this season from this team. People might think that's hyperbole. It was humid yesterday at altitude, at Coors. That game was designed for runs. That game was designed for home runs. That 19 runs, that wasn't a fluke that the Giants got hot like that. To that extent, surprising, yes. But you had a total, an over-under in Vegas of, what, 13.5 for game one?
Yeah.
14.5 for game two? And he goes out there and locks them down like that? That's one of the all-time great Jeff Samardzija performances.
Yeah, without a doubt it was. You go out there and you saw the way the ball was flying out of the park, especially for the Giants. I mean, back-to-back home runs, Stephen Bolton, you have Buster and Brandon. You say, okay, my goodness, this is going to be a long day. The second game, you even the second game where the pitcher had pitched outstanding Rodriguez because of the fact he only allowed one run. So
really sharp yesterday.
They did a hell of a job, and that 14 didn't happen in the second game. So just goes to show the Giants were able to play good defense. The bats wasn't necessarily alive in the second game, but scored 19 the first one, able to get a sweep. That's big for this Giant organization.
Yeah, we have to also remember in that second game, shout out Garrett Hampson for not one but two outs made on the bases. Coming around third base, he slips, the ball goes to the plate, Vogt goes for the ghost tag, no one's there, looks up, and oh, we've got a guy scrambling back to third. Throw down to Pablo. Nice. Makes the tag, slaps it down, and later in the game, Hampson with a double, tried to stretch for three, thrown out again. So it was partly Derek Rodriguez.
Yeah.
It was the back-to-back homers in a Giant offense we're more used to seeing with two runs, but also some gaffes from Colorado to give that one away.
How dare you try to take away from that?
Not taking anything away.
I'm
the guy who's been leading the charge toward the second wild card, Joe, so I can keep it real.
I was on vacation.
Yes, and I was suffering through Roxy Bernstein trying to spoil my dreams as they sit three back of the second card. I just think it's fair to point out that defense by the Giants and some base running gaffes by Colorado played a role.
So I hyped myself up for betting Samardzija yesterday at plus 180. I'm going to give you a few losers I handed out yesterday as well.
Uh-oh.
Loser number one, I like the under in the Dodger-Philly game. Main reason, for anyone who watched Sunday Night Baseball, the Dodgers were in Boston playing the Red Sox. That game doesn't start until 7 Eastern. It went 12 innings, 5 hours and 40 minutes. It didn't end until just before 1 a.m. You have to do your media responsibilities afterwards. You have to shower up. You have to hit the bus, get to the airport, fly down to Philly. Not a far flight, but they didn't get in until like 6 a.m. the next morning. You get off the plane. You got to go check in at the hotel. I'm thinking, all right, Kershaw's pitching for the Dodgers. And while the guy going for the Phillies, Eflin, is a complete bum, he's going to have this tired Dodger lineup. He should be able to take advantage of it. Incorrect.
Yeah.
The Dodgers went ahead and covered the over themselves.
Were they playing in Colorado?
Smashed Philadelphia. Smashed Philadelphia. The other one I liked was the under in the Rays-Yankees game. It was 9. Paxton, do you even know the outcome before you hit those buttons?
Yeah, we were talking about it earlier this morning. It's a great story, but that's why I'm playing the laugh track because it's only funny because I didn't bet it.
Paxton and Snell, two lefties, going against two lineups that ranked 20th or worse in OPS against lefties. Plus, both pitchers had recently faced the other team. They had pitched quite well. So I like the under at 9, right? I think these values, these totals on the Yanks are inflated a little bit because of how well they've been performing. So everything's going. It's cruise control, baby. Lead off, Travis d'Arnaud, lead off, home run. First guy out. So I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, man, I'm screwed. But it keeps working its way through, and the pace is fantastic. Yanks grab the lead, I believe, in the eighth. It's 4-2. I got some runs to play with. Chapman's coming in to lock it down. Puts two guys on immediately, gets two strikeouts, and then gives up a 3-run Oppo Taco to push it on 9, 5-4. d'Arnaud for his third home run of the game. Third home run of the game. Bump! You throw 100 miles an hour, right. He's trying to throw this breaking garbage. Just blow him away, Chapman.
Oppo Taco to push it on 9. So
yeah. at that little bandbox they call Yankee Stadium. That thing was nothing more than a routine flare to Joe Panic if it's at Oracle Park. And instead, this thing carries all the way out into the right field bleachers. So started the day nice with the Samardzija dog, and then it was pretty much nothing but losers after that.
And there's your update. Push. Yeah, and I apologize for trying to pile on with the laugh track, but...
Do you really apologize, or are you throwing words at me?
With all due respect,
oh my God,
I'm really sorry, Joe.
I was waiting for that.
I mean, what are we going to do here? If the Giants find a way to go, let's say 9-3 over their next 12, what's the front office doing? What's the decision making? This is like the you don't want to say it's the worst case scenario, because obviously there's going to be excitement, buzz, you're going to sell some tickets and all that good stuff. But at the same time, this kind of flies in the face of everything you had planned for this season.
Yes, but if you have the constitution of being in that position, you've got to stay the course. You had a plan and you have to stick to it. And you look at what they've done from Kevin Pillar and all the pieces they've added. Alex Dickerson was acquired from San Diego for Franklin Van Gerp. That was a trade that
I hated. I was a big Van Gerp fan.
Huge Van Gerp guy. He's pitching for Lake
Elsinore. Nobody's rooting for Van Gerp more than I am. Nobody.
And that's my point. Nobody remembers the Van Gerp era or the Van Gerp deal, yet Dickerson's got four home runs. He's played pretty well. Donovan Solano followed Farhan Zaidi over from the Dodger minor league organization, and he's come up and been incredible as a utility player. He's hitting .312 playing multiple positions. So the plan from Zaidi has worked as far as what he's done so far. So you have to have the constitution to stay the course. Even though I've been telling you for a week and a half, that they are in this wild card race and they should hang in as long as they can, you still have to stick to your plan. And if that means trading Bumgarner and Smith, maybe another reliever, Tony Watson, maybe Samardzija, if you can trade him, you still got to do it.
Couldn't agree more. And it's a very, very dicey situation to be in, because the people in this organization who are beloved are the ones who are tied to the three rings, right? When you're the new guy coming in and you haven't really achieved anything yet and no one was expecting anything, this is halfway through your first season, right? There's very little you could have done, but no one's going to look at you and be like, hey, great to have you. You got carte blanche. People are going to look at you suspiciously, right? You're the new guy, and they want to make sure if you're going to be tasked with turning this thing around, and Bochy's going to be gone, and Bumgarner's going to be gone, you know, we're going to be a little suspicious. That's what fans do. So Zaidi comes in, he's got his plan. If this team runs hot into the deadline and he trades Bumgarner and Smith, which is what he needs to do, you're going to anger the fan base. And now the fan base, because they're fans, they're not necessarily going to be rational, nor should they be, are going to look at this and they're going to be even more suspicious. And you might have even less of a leash moving forward with some of your decisions. I would say this. Just try to look at it through a different shade of glasses. What they're doing right now, the Giants, is beneficial in two ways. One, it's very entertaining. They're fun to watch right now. And that's a good thing. Number two, they are sending up a very bright neon-colored sign highlighting all of their players that are available for trade right now. They're not just wallowing away in the basement of some division in obscurity where no one's watching them play baseball. People are talking about Bumgarner. People are talking about Will Smith. People are going to start talking about Jeff Samardzija, although it's going to be very difficult to move that contract. The reality is right now with this performance, they're starting to gain more and more attention from the general managers around Major League Baseball. And as a result, it might help some way, shape, or form sweeten a deal. Not saying it will, but that's what it's got to be recognized as. It's a fun period of Giant baseball, but you still have to do exactly what Dibs is saying. Yeah. You have to stay the course. You have to trade off the big names for the assets so that you can truly get this thing moving in the right direction. Because here's another scenario that could play out. And this isn't all that far-fetched. The Giants go into the deadline and they say, you know what? We're going to stand pat. We're going for it. We're not going to go out there and acquire anybody, but we're not going to trade anybody either. All right, great. And you somehow find a way to contend and stay interesting until August and September. And then you miss the playoffs. Or how about this? You make it. You get a wild card spot. And you lose the wild card game. Or you win the wild card game. And then you get blasted by the Dodgers. Right? Then what happens? You go to the offseason. Bumgarner's a free agent. Will Smith's a free agent. You get nothing in return for those guys now. Nothing. So thanks for the memories of contending for that second wild card spot. Or winning it and then losing that game. Now you're stuck with nothing for the two biggest trade chips you had that were going to reboot the franchise. Remember that. It's fun to embrace now, but think big picture. If you want this thing to get back to a truly World Series competitive type level, You've got to make the moves at the deadline and get the maximum return on investment. Enjoy the period for what it is. It's fun.
It's
a fun
tough,
period of
though,
baseball.
Because the muscle memory of that organization is 2010, 2012, and 2014.
No doubt.
When you weren't necessarily the best team in baseball, you get in, you start to win, you go far, and you wake up one morning in October and you're World Series champion. So the temptation, the sweet nectar of victory is recent enough to where you have that muscle memory. And this is obviously different than the NBA, where we'll know by the time October comes who the four or five teams that have a shot to win the title are. In baseball, there really is that sense of if you get in, if you're one of the, 12 teams, or I guess it's five teams in each league, so 10 teams that make the playoffs, you've got a slice of a chance. And now, according to Fangraphs, Low, the Giants' playoff probability has doubled from 1.2 to basically 2.3, 2.4%.
Hey, how about that?
Continue to climb.
Surging,
it
coach.
It started at a point something, now you're at two. Yeah, so it's starting at
the
bottom.
It's like Drake started from the bottom, and now you're at 2%.
They ain't here yet.
No.
It's still 2%.
That's not Drake, sorry. I never really listened to all the words.
No, it started from the bottom, but they're not here. Right. I mean, they're still there, but they did start at the bottom. I guess they are here where they are, but they're not where they want to be, which is here, which is there.
On the flip side of this, though, Joe, don't you want to? No, you're absolutely right. But don't you want to compete? And if these guys can compete and they can get you a wild card, and that's what the A's are going to probably get, a wild card, and they'll be done.
They're cooking.
So is it so bad to get there? Just you put butts in the seats. People are still going to come to the ballpark. It's been way down.
Yeah, but then, okay, so you stand pat with everyone and you get there. And you lose in the wild card game. That's a lot of fun. But now you're going to lose Bumgarner and Smith. You're going to get nothing in return. And then everyone's going to turn on you again. You have to remember this. The fans live in the moment. They're not going to think big picture. Most of them are not. And that's completely fine.
But salaries are coming off the book. Those two guys' salary would still be coming off the book.
But the whole point is to be able to get something in return for them. They have you've got to restock the system. They're doing a decent job. They're doing a decent job. Slowly but surely, the Joey Barts are starting to arrive in the system.
Yeah.
Some of the younger guys are coming up. You're starting to get a very rough idea of what could be in the next few years. But you can't stop there because none of them are guarantees. You just need as many as possible. Zaidi was part of a Dodger era from, 2014 to 2018? They found Walker Buehler. Walker Buehler might be the best pitcher in baseball right now. From his era and the couple years before that with Bellinger and Seager and all these guys they brought in.
Found those guys,
they were geniuses at stocking their system. I mean, the Dodgers get aggressive and bring guys in free agency. Justin Turner's one of those dudes. Yeah. Max Muncy's another one. But the guys they have brought up through the system as well. I mean,
but they're not
brilliant.
Winning titles though, but they're competing.
But that's where you want. That's where you want to be. You get one title a year, right?
Yeah.
You'd
yeah.
rather be the Dodgers yeah. than a possible one-hit wonder this year that comes in and maybe gets in the playoffs, and then you have nothing to return. You've got to replenish the system. You got to put as many poker chips into that as possible. If you've got 20 top prospects and four pan out, all right. You got four guys that are coming up that are going to play well. The more chips you have to fire, the better likelihood you can win some hands and advance further into the tournament. Shout out the final table of the World Series of Poker. Obviously, you know what I've been doing with my evenings.
Is that now over? Because
I actually don't even know. I've been watching some of it and tracking the rest because apparently one guy's been acting like a complete fool and everyone's very upset about it.
I caught a little piece of it on day 7 a couple days ago when we were down to like the final 17, but I didn't get a chance to circle back to it.
I think they're playing the final table right now.
Okay.
Right now it's taking place.
I'll watch it.
So you've got some guys live tweeting it, which there's nothing like a guy live tweeting a final table of a poker event. Let me tell you that.
I'm not a big fan of the pitch clock in baseball, but I do like the bet clock that they have going in poker, although we could speed that thing up a little bit.
Well, some of these guys, they sit there, they look, they're thinking, they're trying to draw it out, and then it's like, how much is that bet? How much does he have left? Just get to it. Just get to it. The sunglasses, all this stuff, I get it. Just get to it.
Yeah, I'm with you. It gets to be a little bit slow when you're waiting 5 minutes on the river.
You, since we have a few seconds left here, you made an interesting point earlier when you're talking about the NBA. You know, a little ways into the season, we'll know who the four or five are. If you had to bet the Western Conference right now, who would you take to win the West? I've got all the odds in front of me, so if you have a request, throw it out. The Clippers are at plus 220. The Lakers are at plus 180. So the Lakers are the favorite. The Clippers are the second favorite. And then it goes to the Rockets and the Warriors at plus 650. Warriors in the fourth position. The Jazz are in the fifth position. If you were to take a bet with it being wide open, which direction are you going right now?
Right now.
And you're locked in. It's a prison bet.
I would go with Houston. I'd go with the Houston Rockets.
Oh, come on.
I'd go with the Houston Rockets.
You think it's going to work?
I like the price, and I like Daryl Morey's aggressiveness. I think it's a step-back year for the Warriors, and even though the Clippers are a team that looks strong, to me, I can't get beyond the fact that it's the Clippers.
What about the Suns, 400-1?
It's a good price,
Coach.
It
could be the year they're due.
Yeah, they are due. DeAndre Ayton ready in a sophomore campaign to pass. And shout out Memphis for winning the Summer League. Ivan Rabb out of Oakland bringing it home. It's a big win for them yesterday.
Memphis. No effect on the odds. They're also 400-1 to win the title.
We should have laid the lumber on the grid. Yeah. They look good all summer.
I like China in that Summer League. They only got that one win, though.
Wow. I think it's the Clippers. I think when you look,
you're going with the second favorite plus 220. Okay,
yeah, who's going to win the West? I think the Clippers for a couple reasons. One,
not a couple reasons. We're up against. I just wanted to get a little sampler.
Sampler.
Give me one reason.
Defense.
Shocking.
Defense. There it is. Defense.
Your guy.
As they say, it wins championships. Absolutely. So going against LBJ. Interesting. I throw the Nuggets out there plus 850. The Dank Nuggets. Just a little sampler. Just to step your toes in the water a little bit. All that good stuff brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises. Who had the Garoppolo comments yesterday? Was it Michael Irvin? Because we had a bunch of great guests on yesterday, and we have a bunch of great guests on today. Jerry Rice at 8:30, Dante Whitner at 9:30, Michael Irvin on Jimmy Garoppolo. You're going to hear that next. But first, here's Stephen Langford with what will no doubt be the greatest update you have ever heard.
Thank you, Joe. And the greatest update of all time is brought to you by Ticket Crushers. The Giants took both games from the Rockies in yesterday's doubleheader, including a 19-2 beatdown in Game 1. Brandon Crawford contributed a tiny bit with 8 RBIs, the most for a middle infielder since the RBI was created in 1920. He also added a home run to his resume in the second game. They continue the series in Colorado as they've won 8 of their last 10, while the A's hope to build on their sweep over the White Sox with a 2-game homestand against the Mariners. NFL Insiders Week rolls on here at 95.7 The Game as Michael Irvin joined Damon yesterday and talked about the wide receivers for the 49ers.
Well, if the room is great and you say I'm proving it, they are proving themselves, just not at this level and in this place. Because all of these guys have come from somewhere and have had success at where they were. Now it's just a matter of proving themselves here, right now, with this team.
Now you'll hear more from our NFL insiders this week as Jerry Rice joins the show at 8:30. Plus, a surprise guest coming up with Damon later today. What else did Michael Irvin say about Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, Jolo and Dibs will discuss next. I'm Stephen Langford on the Bay Area's number one sports station. That's 95.7 The Game.
Jolo and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, here we go. Welcome to the Money Spot. One consecutive hour of commercial-free art for you, our Taco Tuesday listening audience, because we love you and because we have got training camp right around the corner. What are we, I believe, 10 days from reporting, 11 days from the first practice, so we've got a million things to get to. Speaking of which, NFL training camp being less than 2 weeks away, this football season, 95.7 The Game is bringing you the biggest names, including Hall of Famers Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens, and Michael Irvin, former 49ers head coach Steve Mariucci, NFL Network's Brian Baldinger, and more. You will hear from all of our NFL insiders this week on 95.7 The Game, the newest of which, from what I'm being told, will be announced today on the Dame and Bruce Show at 5 o'clock. I don't have the clout to be informed as to who that's going to be. I'm being told it's a surprise. I'm probably being lied to because they don't want me to spill the beans. I can understand the position of the company. I do have quite a large mouth. But, Dibs, you somehow stumbled into the information. You will not tell me who it is, but you're impressed.
Yes, I didn't really stumble into it. That is a nice way of putting it. I actually broke and entered, breaking and entering a B&E, Lo, a classic B&E situation where I got in the boss's office, yeah. I saw the name, yeah. And you're going to be blown away today at 5 when Damon Bruce announces it with Darren Smith, I believe. In for the week, friend of the program from San Diego. You're going to be thrilled. Nice. You're going to be stunned. And you probably will even text me, which I won't open it because you're on pay no mind. But you'll say, wow. Dibs, you were right. Great name.
Time out. Rewind.
Little crop dusting on the way out there.
Just a quick dusting.
You're not paying attention. You can still smoke me. I would be impressed, so I'm going to text you, and then you won't
it's
open
comment,
it?
It's comment, insult, comment,
right.
Done.
And he kept moving.
Hello? That's what we do here on this program, this fine program.
In the interest of keeping it moving, you can always hit us up on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. Michael Irvin, one of the big names that will be joining us throughout the course of the season. And remember, Jerry Rice coming up in less than an hour. Old Jera, as Lo likes to say, will join us at 8:30 this morning. Yesterday, Michael Irvin was on with Damon Bruce and Darren Smith. He was asked about Jimmy Garoppolo, the pressure he's facing this season. He had this to say.
But it is a lot of pressure on Gropp now when he's coming back off that injury. And you have pieces around him that he didn't have around him when he went on that five-game win streak. Now, and it wasn't expected, it's expected now.
It's expected now. It's expected now. I think most of us would agree with that.
Yes.
Last season was the first full season of Jimmy Garoppolo. Expectations were very high. He got hurt. Everything started to fall apart. What have you. But now coming into this season, not really going to be any room, I think, in the eyes of many, especially Michael Irvin, for a, well, you know, he's young. Well, you know, he's learning the system. Well, you know, he's coming off injury. It's time.
Without a doubt. And there's a guy that can save your life. You look at throughout the National Football League, you look at Phillip Rivers. Who's he have? They just wonder. You call him a cockroach, Joe. You say this guy's going to play. He's never going to retire.
That seems a bit unfair. I said Antonio Gates will never get in the Hall of Fame because he'll never stop playing.
Right. I mean, because he just never stops. He's
cockroach.
Never done.
Cockroach. I mean
it's a figure of speech. I mean, the guy's, like you said.
Tough to kill a cockroach.
It's tough to kill him.
It's not hard. You step on it. That's it. It ends.
Sometimes can't step on Antonio Gates, that's for sure.
So maybe he's not a cockroach then. Perhaps.
Yeah, he's kind of.
Perhaps you were wrong, Joe, when you called him that.
But he's played forever. The guy's been unbelievable in his stint here in the National Football League. Look over at Kansas City. Look what the young quarterback's doing there. Mahomes, and he's got a guy, Casey. You look at that.
Old Travis.
You look at him, what he's been able to do. You take a look over at New England Patriots. You think about a guy who just retired, Gronkowski. But Tom Brady and him has been there, and they've always been there through the test of time. You see how consistent. I remember when Manning was playing and playing at a high level. He had Dallas Clark, another guy, tight end. A lot of times you get these tight ends because they're such a nightmare for guys to guard. It makes quarterbacks and it makes them play at a very, very high level. So he's got a guy in Kittle that he's going to have to rely on a lot because they're going to take him away. When they try to take him away, there's going to be guys open. There's going to be a lot of busted coverages where you're running a slant route where a receiver's going to be hit because the safety's going to jump Kittle. I think that Kittle, you're going to be forcing the ball to him. I don't care if he's doubled. He can win. Kelce, they try to double him at times. He can win. Kittle has that same type of deal. So if he stays consistent with that, and those other guys, you'll see a lot of big plays come out of this offense.
And this
year,
I think, is Kyle Shanahan's greatest task, is kind of emulating what Andy Reid's done. Because as you were walking us through that with Travis Kelce, they have so much speed going left to right on the perimeter that you've got to respect that on the motion. So I can't help but wonder if Shanahan's going to adopt some of that with Jet McKinnon this year, sending Jet in that jet sweep motion, faking it to him, sending Kittle down the middle of the field and really opening things up.
Kittle down the middle. That sounds nice. That's a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Kittle down the middle.
Kittle in the middle. Where's he at? In the middle. Kittle down the middle. I like that. We're going to have to write that down. But I was just thinking about that.
I don't know if we
talking.
Need to write it down. I'm pretty sure we can remember
I'm pretty sure I'm going to write this down as soon as I'm done here.
Yeah.
Which is right now.
And like you alluded to, Goodwin and
his, spell middle with two T's for this one.
His speed.
Just in keeping with the show, Kittle down the middle with two T's.
Of course.
Yeah.
What do you think? We're going to all of a sudden become accurate?
Would you please write that down, my man? My man.
But Goodwin's good, too. You're talking about the speed that they got on the outside. You're absolutely right. Those jet sweeps where you have, you know, McKinnon going another way and now Goodwin's going another way. Those safeties are going to have to react because they get out to the edge. They're in trouble. Now you got Kittle, like you said. Hey, diddle, diddle. Then Kittle's
going down the middle.
And you got some.
All right, let's not destroy it in the opening 90 seconds.
No, it's already over.
You got success.
Jump the shark.
It's like that scene of Always Sunny when he says he had a brownout. They're like, what's a brownout? Excuse me. And he goes, a brownout. It's not necessarily a blackout. I remember some things. I call it a brownout. And they all get so excited. They just keep saying brownout. And he goes, well, let's not ruin it right away. And that was the end of it. They just kept saying it. It was done. About a minute later, Madden has their quarterback rankings. Madden, the video game for Madden 2020, it has the rankings for each of the quarterbacks. Now, this isn't necessarily all right, you're at the top of the list. That means you're the best quarterback in the league because that's Patrick Mahomes. He's got a 97. He's listed as the best quarterback in Madden. And I'm not necessarily bringing this into play to debate a video game, but Garoppolo has a rating of 78, which ranks 20th amongst quarterbacks. Do you think he will finish better or worse than the 20th quarterback this season? obviously the criteria for this is somewhat of a moving target,
right.
But is he a top 20 quarterback by the end of the season? When you look at all the production that's out there, yardage, touchdowns, wins, everything that
QB
people care
rating,
about,
all right. That stuff, yeah.
Is he the type of guy that's going to finish 20th in the eyes of many, 20th best quarterback in the NFL, higher or lower?
I'm going to say higher, and I'm going to add in parentheses, he better be, because if he's not, you've got real problems as a 49er team, because I don't think any of the teams, and we could look through whatever metric you want from last year's quarterbacks, I don't know how many playoff teams had a quarterback outside of the top 20 in QB rating, TD to interception percentage, yards per play, total yards, completion percentage, whichever of those you want to cherry pick. I would imagine that all of the playoff quarterbacks were top 20 guys. The only one who maybe fell outside low, Mitchell Trubisky, who had the league's yeah. best defense. So yeah. Other than that, with this 49er team, they're probably not going to have the league's best defense. You were saying that they should be a top half, yeah. maybe even a top 10 defense.
Yeah.
That might be their ceiling.
Right.
So Garoppolo is going to have to be a top 20 quarterback.
No, without a doubt. And he will. I think that.
So you'd have it over top 20? You'd have him inside the top 20?
I'd have him probably inside the top 15. I think 15 is that number. He can't.
Can
be,
I get you to top 12?
No. No.
I'll say he should be top 10. I'll say he's paid like it.
Yeah.
Let's come right out of the gate and establish that. He's yeah. paid like it. And you know what? I think you've got a smart enough coach from an X's and O's perspective on offense that he's going to put you in a position to win. We've seen it before. The best season that Matt Ryan ever produced was an MVP season. That came under Kyle Shanahan. It also resulted in a trip to the Super Bowl. The best season Robert Griffin III ever had, the best season that Matt Schaub ever had, all those came under Kyle Shanahan. Now, those might not be great quarterbacks, but he got the very
right.
most out of them.
Right.
That's what Shanahan's capable of doing if he's able to get the weapons around the guy. I think he's got enough weapons. I'm not saying that this is the most talented offense in the NFL. I think there's enough. I think for the first time in a few years, we can look at the wide receiver core, we can look at the O-line, and we can look at the backfield, as well as Kittle at tight end, and we can say to ourselves, this is good enough to go out and produce, to produce at a high level, and to win some games. I'm not expecting you to be Drew Brees. I'm not expecting you to be Patrick Mahomes. But to threaten being a top 10 quarterback, maybe in terms of rating, I think that's on the table. Here are your top 10 quarterbacks last year in terms of rating. Now, remember, this doesn't necessarily mean these are the 10 best in the business, but this is a metric that helps, you know, identify who's playing well, who's not. Number one, Drew Brees. I would say that he's probably a pretty good quarterback. Number two is your MVP, Patrick Mahomes. Number three is Russell Wilson. Number four is Matt Ryan. Philip Rivers, Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff. Shockingly, at number nine, although his games were limited, Ryan Fitzpatrick. A little bit of Fitzmagic got him in there. And then Kirk Cousins. After that, you got Andrew Luck, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Dak Prescott. Goes on and on. So again, not the be-all, end-all of stats. Because if Brady's not in the top 10 of your stat clearly isn't perfect. But this is an efficiency metric that highlights how well some of these guys have played. And a lot of these guys, good quarterbacks last year. Garoppolo is the type of guy that should be able to threaten top 10 this year. This should be a situation where you go out and take the field in a smart offense, a progressive offense, a modern offense. You put up some numbers, you win some games. No one's saying 14-2, win the Super Bowl, win an MVP. No one's saying you need to do what Patrick Mahomes is doing. But you should be the type of guy that gets to about 4,000 yards passing. You should be over 30 touchdown passes. You should have a 66% completion percentage or higher. You should be able to lead some game-winning drives in the fourth quarter. That's one of the biggest things for me.
Yeah.
By the end of the season, I want to feel confident knowing that if the Niners have the ball down four with a minute 40 to go and one timeout and they're 75 yards away and Garoppolo's taking the field, I want to feel confident in the sense that more often than not, he's going to lead them down and they're going to score. You know when Rodgers gets the ball late, you're in huge trouble. Remember the game, he got jacked in the Rams game and almost in the Niners game where he wasn't going to have a chance to lead him down the field.
Yeah.
You know if he gets the ball, you're in trouble.
Trouble.
Brady gets the ball. You saw what happened against Kansas City. Drew Brees gets the ball. When the greats get the ball, if you're the guy rooting for the defense, you know you're in trouble. You might survive, but more often than not, you know you're about to get burned. I want that to be the feeling you have when Garoppolo has the ball in that situation, that he's going to be able to lead you down the field, and that's what he has to demonstrate this season.
15 to 1,700. That's the number. If you can do that rushing the ball by gimmick plays, whether it's a running back by committee, if you're doing that, this team's in the playoffs. Because if they're going to get you over 15 to 1,700 yards, that means they have established the running game. That means they're catching defenses off guard. That means they got people spread out, and you're moving. When you're able to do that by committee, jet sweep, whether it's running ball, running backs, all those things that this team has at their disposal, at their, I think that's the number. If you can get that 1,500 to 1,700, I think that Jimmy G, he ends up in the top 10 it means you're having success.
Yeah. 1,700 yards would have gotten you the 20th last year. The Colts ranked 20th in rushing last year, 1,718 yards. So I don't think you're setting the bar all that high from a rushing perspective. Right. That's a very reasonable ask.
What did the Cowboys have, if you have the list still up there?
10th. They were 1,963.
Because I was looking at the quarterback statistical comp, and I wanted to keep the name out of it, but now I've tipped the hand that it's Dak Prescott. But you look at the numbers, 38-85 in yards, 67.7%, and a 97 QB rating. The TDs were a little lower, 22, because they run the ball so well. They went 10-6. So that kind of year, I think, to me, would be the baseline for where you're looking at Garoppolo landing.
That's... Statistically, yes. Something does not look right with Prescott, though.
I wanted to keep the name out of it because the numbers, just the raw numbers of it, I think, is what you were describing.
The raw numbers, yes. Then when you get the name, it's a different story. Yeah. The Prescott situation is fascinating for me. I'm not sure how much I'm willing to buy into him. We all know what Guru thinks of him being a Cowboys guy.
Yeah.
Doesn't like him at all.
Yeah.
The thing with Prescott is when you're behind a great offensive line, Prescott's numbers with and without Zeke Elliott, there's too much fluctuation there. A quarterback shouldn't be that dependent on his running back. It's like looking at Jared Goff with and without Todd Gurley. Like, that's not, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that you can only produce at a high level when you're starting running backs in the game. I want the running back to help, no doubt.
I
don't want
it.
Your numbers to fall off the deck because you're starting running back camp.
I totally get it. But if you want success for this team, and with the running backs, with the slew of running backs they have that they can throw at you, and you can spread guys out and getting three wides and getting four wides and all of a sudden keep your tight end at the same time. Now you got guys detached and you've still been able to run screens and draws and spread people out because they can't, they're dropping into coverages. If you can do that for Jimmy G and you'd be efficient like that, it puts team, Dallas isn't exciting, but you get some big plays because of the play action and all those things. If you're running the ball, Jimmy G will have a huge year, Joe, because that play action. Now Kittle's blocking down, and the safety sticks his head in there because he thinks they're going to ready to run the ball, and all of a sudden he's down the middle. There's all kinds of things that comes off that running game, even in 12 personnel, 22 personnel.
22, I was waiting for the fullback, Kyle Juszczyk.
Yeah, you can get some things going if you're able to run the ball, and that just gives you more proficiency, and also it keeps your defense fresh. If you're running the ball and you're dinking and dunking, it makes defense have to gamble. Teams don't like it. It's 4 yards in a cloud of dust, a 3-yard pass. Now you're looking at friggin' 3rd and 2. And I think Kyle Shanahan with the misdirections, quick passes, all those different things they can do with young Jimmy G, you want him to have success, and you do that, defenses, they break.
There is nothing better than a well-timed play-action shot down the field in the fourth quarter when the defense has just completely bitten because they're tired and they're not thinking straight.
Yep.
One of the all-time greats of this, and I want to say the year, I'm going to throw 2011 out there. I think it was Alabama and Georgia in the SEC championship game. Really good game. And this was back before Bama had a guy like Tua, where they didn't throw a whole lot. They were very dependent upon the run. And this was a dogfight like you've ever seen. And they're just going back and forth. And Bama late, it's just run, 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 run. They've been running the whole game. And they get to about the Georgia 40, 45-yard line. And I'm just remembering this from memory because whoever the color commentator was for the game said, watch out for the play action. Bama is going to take a shot here. And they go for the fake. Georgia completely sells out. Whoever the quarterback was makes one good pass all game.
One pass.
Throws it all the way down the field. It's the touchdown that breaks the game open and breaks Georgia's back and ends it. Mark Richt was so close that year to beating Alabama. I don't know if Bama went on to win the title or not. I mean, it seems like so many years ago. But it was this perfectly timed pass because the defense is tired.
Yep.
They're worn down. They're not thinking straight. They've been suckered into this play action all game long. And then you go over the top in that one perfectly timed play.
And the head coach, Joe, on the defensive side, when you're like that, he goes to the coordinator and says, make a play. Get that D. He starts yelling. You see the head coach is on the sideline saying, telling the DC, you need to do something. Why can't we stop them? So what do? They stop playing too high safety. They bring eight guys in the box, and they're sending in. They're still running at him. So now even that single high safety start to peep in there. Now he can't guard both guys. He can't guard both receivers because other safety's in the box. So you're going to win if you can do that consistently and move the ball and stay patient. Patience is the key when you're playing, especially good offense.
I was off by a year. It's 2012.
It's all right.
Yeah, ballpark.
2012. Ballpark. Damn, I really wanted to have that one. It's close. I remember I was watching it, Legacy Stadium at the Palazzo in Las Vegas.
You win a little money on that one?
You spent a lot of time there at Legacy, so it's tough to say. 11, 12, it might have been 13.
Left a lot of my pride there. A lot of my pride, my soul.
Yeah. Was that a good day, though, for you?
You know what?
Did you?
Great question. I can't remember.
Oh,
wow. I honestly can't remember what I was on there.
I imagine you're on Bama.
I find it hard to believe I was betting Georgia in that game. man. All right, so speaking of the running back position, Michael Irvin yesterday with Damon Bruce and Darren Smith was talking about the situation regarding Melvin Gordon and now Zeke Elliott. Top flight running backs who want to get paid. This is going to play right back into what we were discussing because of how important the position is to the Niners' success on offense this season. Take a listen to Michael Irvin.
I understand that they want to win by committee at the position, but when you give game changer, you got to pay the guy. And I don't. I totally understand these guys are tired of being strapped with the average, when they are better than the average and they are great.
Salary cap league. Salary cap league means you got to make some sacrifices here and there. Baseball, you don't need to sacrifice. You want to spend? Look at the Red Sox. Look at the Yanks. Go out and spend. Look at the Dodgers. Go out and spend. Basketball, you can spend. There are ways to figure it out. This is very different. All right? Salary cap league, and if you've got a franchise quarterback and you're paying a franchise quarterback money, there are going to have to be sacrifices at certain positions. This is one of the all-time great debates people are having now because a guy like Melvin Gordon, a guy like Zeke Elliott, a guy like Todd Gurley, they're perceived as game changers, guys that can take you to the next level. Though you played in an era with a bunch of them, LT being first and foremost.
Yeah.
But do you want to commit a lot of money to one guy at that position knowing the risk that comes with the injury? Here's something I want to run by you. Last 10 Super Bowl champions, I'm going to give you the leading rusher on each of these teams, working backwards. The New England Patriots won the Super Bowl in 2018. Leading rusher, Sony Michel, 931 yards. The year before that, it was the Philadelphia Eagles. LeGarrette Blount, 766 yards. The year before that, the New England Patriots. Again, LeGarrette Blount, 1,161 yards. The year before that, Denver. C.J. Anderson, 849 yards. The year before that, New England, again. Jonas Gray, 412 yards was the team's leading rusher.
Wow.
The year before that, Seattle, Marshawn Lynch, beast mode, 1,257 yards. The year before that, Ray Rice with the Ravens, 1,143 yards. The Giants with Ahmed Bradshaw at 659. Mm. The Packers with Brandon Jackson at 703. The Saints with Pierre Thomas at 793. Of the last 10 Super Bowl champions, only three had a 1,000-yard rusher. Only three. Now, you can find any stat to make your case, but most of these teams went with a running back by committee. I've got one guy who can catch passes. I've got one guy who can blast between the tackles. That's one of the things I like about the Niners and the diversity they have in the backfield. Top three running backs, I think, in the eyes of many of us this season are going to be Coleman, McKinnon, and Breida in no particular order. $9.4 million. $9.4 million for this season in terms of your salary cap hit for Tevin Coleman, Jerick McKinnon, Matt Breida. All three can catch passes. All three can carry the ball between the tackles. If one gets hurt, another guy can step up. You've got diversity there. Look around the rest of the National Football League, though. Highest paid salary cap hit this year, David Johnson, Arizona, $9.75 million. They couldn't even get him involved last season.
Yeah.
Todd Gurley, number two, $9.2 million. Arthritic knee. LeSean McCoy, number three, just over $9 million. Le'Veon Bell, number four, $8.9 million. Getting robbed by naked women when he goes to the gym. He's got his own problems. Zeke Elliott, number five, $7.9 million. Fournette, number six, $7.4. You see where I'm going, right? Great running backs can change the game, but how much money do you want to invest in the position? You know what Irvin's saying. If you can have one of these game changers, it could blow it open. But there are like two of them right now. It's like Zeke and Gurley. Those are the guys who carry the offenses. Outside of that, it's got to be the quarterback.
No, yeah, it's no question. You know, it's your quarterback or it's your defense. I mean, you look at, you know, what the Rams was able to do. A lot of that was predicated on their defense. You look at, you know, even when the Saints won the Super Bowl, the year when they won the Super Bowl, it was that defense, too, that did a lot to help them win that game. Even when you're talking about Baltimore Ravens, when they won the Super Bowl, Ray Rice didn't do much. But you know what? that defense help them win that game. So when you think about what it is, yeah, the quarterback is, this is a quarterback-driven league. And I think a lot of it does, responsibility falls on the quarterback position. But I think also it's what you have. You know, most of these teams, even the Patriots in the Super Bowl, the big wins, when you talk about Tom Brady taking over, not running the ball, a lot of it has been predicated on these defenses. You look at what the defense were able to do for New England, held the Rams, one of the best offense, you know, under 15. I mean, that was dismal. So, yes, I think that quarterback is the main focus, and that's why they get the King's ransom. So I think running backs is a good, you know, a good change up. And it's just how is your team built? Because, you know, you put a Zeke Elliott, you know, with the Tom Brady, how much better would it be? I don't know. How much better would it be if you put him on certain teams with, you put him with Aaron Rodgers? You don't think Aaron Rodgers now is more prolific to play action because you got a guy is a game changer?
Give Rodgers anything.
Yeah.
Anything. One of the all-time great NFL crimes is the wasting of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay.
Well, they're running
back. They want to spend money.
Is a converted wide receiver. That shows you how much they care about the running game, right?
No, you're right.
The guy Montgomery, it was number 80, for crying out loud. Your wide receiver turned running back. And you look at what New England did with James White, a guy who wasn't much of a ball carrier. He's a great receiver. So that's their use of the running back. To your point about Todd Gurley, the fact that he got hurt late in the season last year is ultimately what kind of derailed their entire run. You had to go to C.J. Anderson maybe more than you would have because Gurley was banged up. So even if you do have a lead back, 16 games plus 3 or 4 in the playoffs, it's tough to have a fresh back in the Super Bowl.
What do you think of this platoon? Coleman, McKinnon, Breida. What do you think about them going into this season? Are you confident in the running back position? 0 to 5. 5 would be you have a healthy Todd Gurley, probably. You're like, this position is not a concern at all. It's probably what they say in Dallas. It's what they say with a healthy Todd Gurley. It's what they'd say in Dallas back with Emmitt Smith.
Maybe
guys
in
like
New
that.
York with Saquon. And
yeah, without question.
Maybe with Fournette. You know, I don't know, even maybe Fournette's a 4.
He's probably like a 4, considering what he's shown, but he's also had some problems. But Barkley's a great example.
Yeah.
Those would be the 5s. It doesn't have to be the one guy. It's just the position in general. 0 to 5, where do you rank it for the Niners?
Barring injury?
Of course, yes.
Yeah. Oh, if these guys are injured,
going into the season, all 4 are healthy.
4.
4, really? That's nice.
It's really nice. You got a guy in Coleman can catch the ball, can run hard. You got McKinnon. McKinnon had some, you know what, had some good stuff in him. Unfortunately, he blew out the knee. Is he going to get back to 100%? If this guy's back to 100%, your backfield, brother, is tough. You look what Breida was able to do. Breida's one of the best stretch runners this game has seen right now. I mean, if you look at this guy, when Breida gets to the outside, the way that he's able to hit those holes and pick it through there, this guy's a great zone runner who had a lot of success. He just couldn't stay healthy. You got to look at this running back position, and I think you've got to say a 4.
If you're at a 4.
That's why I have it at a 3.5, because you dropped about 3 or 4 ifs in there on Jet McKinnon, and I think it's
healthy,
fair.
But healthy.
And I think it's still an if, though, because you got to see him at full speed.
I agree.
And the other little wrinkle to this that I think is going to be interesting, I was going to say fascinating, but I'm really not fascinated by it. I'm interested by it, is what do you do with Raheem Mostert? Because he's your special teamer. And you always talk about teams. If you can play on the teams, the special teams, you've got to be active. So for me, Mostert's got to be up on game day. So, and you always talk about 4 running backs. You usually don't have 4 running backs active on game day. So if you've got McKinnon and Coleman and Breida, is one of those 3 going to be inactive on a game day?
Either one is going to be inactive or somebody's getting cut. And it looks like, is Mostert going to be the guy out? I know he broke his arm. I know you're talking about he plays special teams. But do you have another linebacker that you brought in?
Right.
Is there another linebacker that can fill that position? You talked about the receiver position. They got a bunch of new receivers. Is there another special team? Is there another guy at the receiver position that you look at, a young guy, and you say, this guy has got that boy dog, like a Kasim Osgood? He knew he never was going to touch the field, just like this running back you're talking about. But what did Kasim Osgood end up playing 13, 14 years? Because he gave everything to special teams. So you look at Tasker. A lot of these guys, they couldn't play.
Oh, yeah. Shout out the Buffalo Bills, baby.
But they couldn't touch the field. But what they were able to do? Special teams, it meant something to them. So I'm saying, when you're talking about this, is it running back?
Raheem
is it
Mostert,
is Raheem going to make it? I don't know, bro. I look at it because those two running backs, I don't know what McKinnon's knee, if he's showing signs and he's cutting and looking good, he's not going anywhere.
Of course.
Breida ain't going nowhere. You saw what this guy could do, the way that he ran the ball, averaging, what, 4 or 5 yards a tote? I mean, Breida had a hell of a year.
5.3.
That's hard to do. That is friggin' hard to do. And it wasn't like he only toted the ball 70 times. It wasn't like he toted it 10 times or something like that. The guy had how many carries?
153 carries.
And you averaging 5.3, you're doing something.
If you were doing Mount special teams more, who would be on it?
Exclude kickers.
The kickers and the punters, because we spent a lot of time on Robbie Gould yesterday. We love Robbie Gould. No one loves Robbie Gould more than me.
Are we also excluding returners?
We'll put them on it. Returners, okay. And the Steve Tasker types, the guys that appeared everywhere. Think about it for a second. Let me do the you are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning. Welcome to your 8 o'clock hour of Joe Low and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Jerry Rice. You may have heard of him. He's coming up in 30 minutes at 8:30. Dante Whitner at 9:30. I want to get into a new feature we have here on the program. We got to talk about what the Giants did in Colorado yesterday. Special teams aces all time since we're on it. We're going to do it for a couple of minutes here. Who do you got? Who are the first names that come to mind?
First ones that came to my mind were Deion Sanders, for one, because he was an unbelievable punt returner. He made the punt return exciting again. And Dante Hall, of a similar vein, from the Kansas City Chiefs. Phenomenal returners. That's why I was wondering if we would separate returners from special teamers, but those are the first two I thought
Devin
of.
Devin Hester? Right.
Yeah, without question.
Yeah.
Metcalf?
Mike Shanahan on line one, that game against the Broncos where Shanahan kicked it to him twice late in the game and he took two back to the house to win it.
Yeah, Metcalf?
Metcalf's a good one.
Oh, my God.
Mitchell?
The Mitchell? Brian
Peanut
Mitchell?
Tillman?
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you look at these guys, because you're talking about Kasim Osgood, you're talking about Steve Tasker. Yeah, there are some guys on special teams. I forget the fella in New England, number 53, white boy, could get. He was just on every special team. Dude played 8 or 9 years. He'd made all the tackles.
Tip of the tongue. Classic New England guy.
Right.
Classic locker room glue guy, all those terms. Damn.
He just, every time he, and then another guy you guys don't talk about, Wiggins. Wiggins was another great player. Didn't touch the field, but played special teams.
You mentioned Dante Hall?
Yes.
Josh Cribbs.
Oh, correct.
Remember Josh Cribbs?
Call.
He was a guy that played on all of them, too. He would run down and make tackles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Trying to figure out some of these other ones.
Oh, my God. It's
Mel Gray is one of the ones that's on a list. I can't really speak to it. It was a long time ago.
Old Mel, what a great player.
I don't know if I put someone on text line Desmond Howard. Was he that elected?
He won a Super Bowl MVP.
Was he, you know?
The thing is, I don't know if it was a long-term consistent thing, but he won a Super Bowl MVP.
That was big for me. I hit the
Rob
squares.
Rob Ninkovich. Was that one of it? Yes. He also played defense, too.
Yes.
That's shout out to Chilton Autobody text line, 95795. Big help.
Benny Thompson, that was the meanest dude. Text line, I see 443. Without a doubt, Benny Thompson with the Ravens was a mean, mean little man. Little dude, too, boy. A
lot of people jumping on Devin Hester.
Yeah.
One of the all-timers.
Yeah.
One of the all-timers there. All right. We have a new feature we're introducing today. I don't know if anyone in this room even knows about it outside of me. I'm just going to throw to the audio, and we're going to work from there.
Bosa Watch.
Wait.
Okay. I thought we were going to get a little bit more there, but hit it one more time for the people.
Bosa Watch.
That's right. We're introducing Bosa Watch. Panic levels on a day-to-day basis. Nick Bosa, number 2 overall pick, the San Francisco 49ers, still unsigned. Now, if I'm not mistaken, we are 11 days from the first practice and 10 days from the players reporting to training camp. So 10 days from now. Now, we set this up yesterday. We're going to ask the question every day, kind of like that, over under 3.5 wins in the Western Conference playoffs, just to have a moving scale to see where everyone is. So to reiterate from yesterday, Nick Bosa, if healthy, is on the field for practice number 1. Yes or no?
I'm in the camp of no still, Joe.
And this is all based on whether or not the contract will be signed. We're not arguing from an injury perspective. We are because of what happened with his brother. We are officially on Bosa Watch.
Bosa Watch. Oh,
really like a jolt of coffee right there. It's like a PED right in your left glute.
Bosa Watch.
I like it. Thank you, Ratto, for getting to work on that. That's tremendous.
Yeah, it only took 2 hours. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding, people. He had it hours ago.
You know how he does it.
Yeah.
Step on the young kids.
Yeah.
Where are you? Because it is Bosa watch.
Do you think he will be available for the first practice contractually? Will he be signed before the start of camp?
No.
I don't like that.
I know. This is a guy.
I don't like your tone.
I know.
I don't like the way you're looking at me right now, and I don't like your answer.
Because I wanted him to be there too, but I think here's a guy you understand. He's not afraid. He understands it's about himself, meaning he's going to get every maximum dollar, and they're going to make sure that that language in there is going to be beneficial to them. They are not going to bend. They are not going to break, because at the end of the day, he's going to get all of his money. He's going to get everything that he's going to desire. I know you're slotted. But the language is going to have to be in their favor, or he's not signed.
At what point do they start finding him, or can they start? I guess you can't find him if he's not signed, right?
Correct.
So,
and he's a rookie. It's his first deal, and he's not under contract. And he's going to be like, hey, look, I want what's best in the language. Unless he's asking for something that's, you know, unheard of. But
it's like a Good Will Hunting. Retainer. Retainer.
Yeah.
So they really,
you want us to just give you cash right now?
The team has no...
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.